Peace Health Peace Harbor Medical Center presents Doc Talk, an informative health series educating our community on the services provided at Peace Health. We will begin with our host, George Henry, after these messages.
During uncertain times, the best way to stay healthy is to know the facts. Here are some ways we all can help stop the spread of COVID-19. Only leave your home for necessities. Wash your hands for at least 20 seconds. Call your doctor before going to the clinic or hospital if you're experiencing COVID-19 symptoms. At Peace Health, the safety and well-being of our patients, caregivers, and communities is our highest priority. We are all in this together. For more information, log on to peacehealth.org/COVID.
At some point in her life, one out of every eight women will get breast cancer. One out of eight. Most women can beat it, but only with early detection. Don't let breast cancer stop you. Mammograms save lives.
Better total care. Peace Harbor Imaging now has digital mammograms. Get one.
Joining me now for the July edition of Doc Talk, we have Pat Kirby, who's the facilities manager at Peace Harbor Hospital, and we also have CAO Jason Hawkins with us this morning. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I understand, and I knew this actually before Ann told me, that you guys have some construction going on at Peace Harbor. You're finally getting some seismic upgrades done. Can you remind us how this all came to be? Jason, do you want to take that, or is that for you, Pat?
Well, I think it'd be best to turn it over to Pat. He's really been instrumental here for several years and has really made this his passion to try to provide the infrastructure here at Peace Harbor in the event there were to be a Cascadia event. So, Pat, you want to give a little history with this?
Sure, yeah. So this all started from a Oregon legislature mandate in 2001 that required that buildings, public buildings, schools, fire departments, police departments, as well as hospitals be seismically upgraded by the year 2022, January of 2022. And we were aware of this back in 2008. And there is a little statement that goes along in that legislature that says, if funding is available. And so we kept that in the back of our mind, waiting for a potential time when we had that funding that would allow us to do this seismic upgrade. And then in 2011, there was the March 7th, 2011 Japanese earthquake that happened, and that sparked the state of Oregon to start a Oregon resiliency program for there was eight parts to it. One of the parts was looking at the communities along the coast and looking at hospitals specifically. So in 2011, we joined with IGAMI, which is the Department of Geology and Mineral Industry. And they put a task force together. I was able to participate in most of their workshops through 2011 and 12 and 13. And they started the work of studying along with the university or the Oregon State University, understanding what the Cascadia Fault is about and what would happen to the coast should we have a Cascadia event. And in that studying, they came down and helped us get going on trying to get some money so that we can get our seismic upgrade. And in 2018, the opportunity came for us to submit a grant for $2.5 million. We submitted that grant, and then we were awarded that grant in April of 2019. So that's where we started, and now we are completing that grant, working forward to start that construction and get that going so that we can become seismic upgraded.
Now, what sort of projects are covered under this funding?
So this specific funding deals with structural upgrades, just strictly structural, meaning the framing, the hard components of the building, and making sure that those components stay in place during a Cascadia event and they don't shift out of place, buildings don't fall down. So it covers that explicitly. There's what they also call non-structural components of the building, and those have to be completed by the hospital itself along with the seismic upgrade. So they have to work together. So parts of it we have to be responsible for, and then the grant allows us to do the major work, which is the actual structural.
Now, those kind of things that the hospital has to do, is that like making sure things don't fall off the wall, making sure rolling carts and stuff like that are stable? Is that the kind of thing that you guys have to do?
Yeah, so non-structural are all your mechanicals, your piping, your air handlers, your heat pumps, your chillers, your generators, it has to deal with shelving, your storage rooms, making sure they don't collapse. So those kind of components, the components that you usually take, you know, aren't part of the building structure, but are kind of attached to it.
Now, does any work have to be done underneath the foundation, or is this all foundation and up?
So the structural part of the construction has three components. One is there's upgrades to the footings. The footings are actually underground in the slab or under the slab. So there's parts where we're going to be upgrading the footings in the hospital. The second components are tie downs, which tie the walls to the footings, keep them in place. And then the third component is shearing the walls so that they don't move sideways or back and forth during an event. So those three components are the main structural upgrades that are happening to the hospital: the footings, the tie downs, and shear walls. Building in more shear walls and making sure that they're not going to fall apart on us.
Now, obviously, we don't have a huge hospital. So how is this going to affect, you know, patients being moved around or patient care or surgical rooms and stuff like that? How's it going to affect that as you're doing this upgrade?
Yeah, I'll jump in on this one. Eliminating any services during this project. I should say this is a 12-month project that has seven phases and 29 mini projects inside of those seven phases. That's really going across the main hospital building. Because the ER was recently built and was already at, I guess, standards for seismic Cascadia event, we don't have to do much work in our emergency department. So most of our areas are either being worked on, we're moving them around the building somewhere, so you might get services in a different place. Or right now, they're starting their work around 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and they're working late into the evening, so we don't disrupt services for our patients and our community, George.
So are you still going to be able to do the proper amount of allowed surgeries and stuff like that for the time being?
Yes, we're not seeing any significant disruption that way. Maybe instead of doing maybe 10 or 12 cases on one day, we might do 8 and do 8 the next day. So we'll see more level loading of services throughout the week for things like that. We might, you know, move the ICU from the ICU suite and make some of our medical surgical beds ICU compatible, so we're able to take care of ICU patients in those medical surgical beds.
Now, you mentioned Cascadia, the Cascadia subduction zone. I think most people know by now from all the press and everything that we are kind of in an earthquake vulnerable spot there. But recent research into the tsunami and recent changes in that have come about in the last 2 years. Is the hospital considered in or out of the tsunami zone at this point?
So in 2013, working with IGAMI, they did some plotting and did all their studies here in the Florence area, and we participated in that study. And at that time, they distinguish us outside of the tsunami inundation zone at its worst scenario. And the worst scenario being that if the earthquake happens, the earthquake happens about 60 miles directly off of our coast, and we get the blunt force of that, that would be the worst scenario. And they had declared that we're outside of that inundation zone. But in 2016, there was a lot of questions in the community asking about, well, how truthful is this study and so forth. So we asked for IGAMI and their engineers and to come back and take a look again at our footprint here in their community and just kind of explain to us why they consider us out of the inundation zone. And they did. They came back and did some more studying and said, yeah, you're definitely going to be out of the zone where the worst case scenario could happen. You're safe. And so that's where we landed. And that's the words we're kind of holding to right now.
On this edition of Doc Talk, I have the pleasure of speaking with Pat Kirby, the facilities manager at Peace Harbor, and also CAO Jason Hawkins. And we'll be back in a second with more on this edition of Doc Talk.
At some point in her life, one out of every eight women will get breast cancer. One out of eight. Most women can beat it, but only with early detection. Don't let breast cancer stop you. Mammograms save lives.
Better total care. Peace Harbor Imaging now has digital mammograms. Get one.
During uncertain times, the best way to stay healthy is to know the facts. Here are some ways we all can help stop the spread of COVID-19. Only leave your home for necessities. Wash your hands for at least 20 seconds. Call your doctor before going to the clinic or hospital if you're experiencing COVID-19 symptoms. At Peace Health, the safety and well-being of our patients, caregivers, and communities is our highest priority. We are all in this together. For more information, log on to peacehealth.org/COVID.
Joining me on Doc Talk, Pat Kirby, the facilities manager at Peace Harbor Hospital, CAO. Jason Hawkins is also with us today. Now, in a large-scale disruption of a daily life, like the Cascadia subduction earthquake possible, a lot of factors will come into that. You know, we all assume that we'll be able to get to the hospital, even though the hospital may be upgraded and standing. Are there contingencies for getting people in and out in cases like that, in cases like road buckling and stuff like that?
You know, I think that we know that we're not in a tsunami zone, and we know that when we're done with this, that we believe that the hospital will be a resource or a sanctuary for people to come to if there is a significant event like that. I know that we've worked a lot with WELOG, the Western Lane Emergency Operating Group, and there's a lot of things in place to help with, depending on the type of issues that we would need, whether it's roads or infrastructure to get across waterways, making sure there's adequate food and housing, making sure that there's medical needs, physical medical needs in particular are being met. It's one of those circumstances that we need to be kind of prepared for a number of things. We also need to be prepared that perhaps we'll be somewhat insulated or isolated from parts of the world, and how we procure power for our local energy sources and those kind of things. And those are things that WELOG and Pat's been instrumental in the past. I don't know if you want to speak to any of that in more detail, Pat.
Yeah, so working with the Emergency Operations Group, we've done drills, tabletop drills, back in 2018 and 19, around Cascadia. We participated in a statewide Cascadia drill as well, and just realizing a lot of our vulnerabilities and understanding how we can alleviate those vulnerabilities appear in those drills. And so they're good to have those drills. And then along with WELOG, understanding what resources we may or may not have or how long it will take to get resources from our own community as well as outside of our community. So we work really well together. I commend the work that WELOG has done and for us to be able to participate in that group.
Now, we've seen in recent months the necessity for PPP, personal protective equipment, and how that has become a priority in getting things stocked like that. Does the hospital do other things like that, like say say, example, for food. Do you guys have a storage of that, or is that something that you just kind of keep stocked to a certain level and not worry about overstocking?
Well, we do stock for the requirement, a federal requirement that allows us to have enough food for at least 4 days. More likely, we have enough food for a week or more. But yes, it is one of those. Food will be one of those resources that I think us, along with other folks in town, are going to have to deal with in a seismic cascading event. It's a tough one. Storing a lot of food has its has a lot of issues that go along with that, considering space and expirations and rotation and so forth. So we have looked at that. We have talked about it, and we know that is that's one area that always can use a little bit more improvements. We alleviate some of that with mutual agreements with our local grocery stores or our local vendors that supply food. If they're able to supply us with food, we have vendors that come out of both Coos Bay over and from the valley and so forth. Granted, during a cascading event, that may not be feasible for a while, but it is something that we make sure we do have.
Well, getting back to the seismic upgrades and the work being done, how long did it take to find a contractor to do this? Because I think the grant came about a year ago. Was it difficult in finding the right fit for the hospital, for the people to do the work?
I think we're always very thoughtful about that. We always want to make sure that they do healthcare work. That's always an important attribute. Somebody who knows us as well is always an important characteristic for that. This is a challenging project, given the complexity of having to get in and out of certain departments and not disrupt patient care, not create, an environment that's not safe for patient care with the drywall dust and other things that are going on. So we were certainly cultivating that interest and in creating a competitive situation over the summer and into the fall, because there was a lot of requests for information to understand, because of getting inside the walls throughout the building. And we were getting close to really solidifying that, and then the coronavirus hit in late winter, early spring, and really we continued to work through with them and solidify that relationship with Lise Crutcher Lewis. And really, once back in May, I would say, once the surge kind of passed us, Pat and his team immediately jumped into this and started executing the agreements so that we could start the end of June. So I think all things considered, really good work from the time it was awarded, given kind of the environment that we were in for at least the last 6 months.
And what are the expectations for completion of the project?
Pat, I believe it's end of May, June?
Yeah, we're probably looking at the closing and final partial components of this. It would be June of next year.
Does any of that length of time have anything to do with the current coronavirus situation, or is that really doesn't factor into it?
I think to some degree it does. All the contractors are having to maintain all the same standards that we do. You'll see them if they're coming into the building. They're going through all the screening protocols that we're going through. We're going through. They're wearing their masks. So all the things that we are experiencing as caregivers here at Peace Harbor or members of the community, they're having to adhere to. So there is some complexities around that. And but generally speaking, I think it's still, I think any contractor right now is probably going through a similar process.
I'm speaking with Pat Kirby, facilities manager at Peace Harbor Hospital, and Jason Hawkins, the CAO over at Peace Harbor. And you're listening to the July edition of Doc Talk, and we'll be right back.
At some point in her life, one out of every eight women will get breast cancer. One out of eight. Most women can beat it, but only with early detection. Don't let breast cancer stop you. Mammograms save lives.
Better total care. Peace Harbor Imaging now has digital mammograms. Get one.
During uncertain times, the best way to stay healthy is to know the facts. Here are some ways we all can help stop the spread of COVID-19. Only leave your home for necessities. Wash your hands for at least 20 seconds. Call your doctor before going to the clinic or hospital if you're experiencing COVID-19 symptoms. At Peace Health, the safety and well-being of our patients, caregivers, and communities is our highest priority. We are all in this together. For more information, log on to peacehealth.org/COVID.
On the July edition of Doc Talk, Pat Kirby, the facilities manager at Peace Harbor Hospital, and Jason Hawkins, CAO, are joining me today. And let's do a quick wrap-up, and then I want to talk about a couple other things here. But based on experience of other coastal hospitals that have been affected by major earthquake, what are some of the biggest challenges you feel like you will face in a large-scale event?
I think resources, basic resources, including water, electrical power long-term wise, those are challenges in a big event like a Cascadia event. And I think all the hospitals we have met, all the hospitals on the coast have convened in workshops together to help come up with ideas on how to best to alleviate those concerns of resources. And so we, you know, a lot of the hospitals have different ideas and have implemented them, like storing water, drilling their own wells, so forth. So those are probably the biggest obstacles or concerns that we have coming Cascadia event.
Let's switch over for a moment here, if we can, to the COVID-19 pandemic. Lane County Public Health had announced this week that the 97439 zip code has 12 cases overall. They feel like they've got it pretty much contained, but I think both of you being here have seen the traffic over the past couple weeks and how heavy it's been, especially this past weekend and this past Monday and Tuesday. Does this concern you at all, or the hospital at all, with the amount of staff we have versus what the potential could be if this were to get out of hand?
Well, I guess there's a couple ways of probably looking at it. I think healthcare as a whole is prepared in a spot where we weren't. We have testing now. We didn't have that 6 months ago. We have a lot more tracing available to us, just understand where the sources are coming from and where potentially new sources could be coming from of the virus. We have a pretty good supply of PPE, personal protective equipment that we've talked about. A lot of our processes have all changed. All of our exit and entry points have been kind of locked down in a way that we can really make sure we're screening all of our visitors and all of our patients. We know we have to kind of cohabitate with this virus, and we know we need to put as much measures in place to create a safe environment. And I know that we will have some activity, certainly, tourism and as people are coming to the coast. And I think if we're, some people will say if we're treating each person as if they're positive, then we will wear masks, we'll wash our hands, we'll maintain social distancing, and we can kind of coexist with this until a vaccine becomes available or until we reach some sort of herd immunity, if that's still possible.
Now, how are the providers doing with all this? Are they seem to be pretty solid and doing well emotionally in that with having to deal with this on a daily basis?
You know, it can be, we should give a shout out to them and both our providers and our caregivers who are on the front line, you know, taking care of our community and recognizing that people need our help, and they're putting themselves in the way of making sure that happens. And so some days are better than others, and we just want to make sure that we're doing that. And I would always say, if you know somebody that's a caregiver here or a provider here or anywhere, send them a note and tell them thank you for what they're doing, because it's, you know, this virus is as active as it's ever been, as we know. We have created capacity, inpatient capacity, and have found some solutions where people are getting sick, but they're not maybe being admitted to the ICUs like they were before. And where we have treatments in place that are helping people get home with this. So But yes, back to your initial point, they're holding up pretty good. They're a fantastic bunch. They're very resilient. But there's nothing like a thank you is a good shot in the arm for anybody.
Absolutely. And I share that with you, and I'll thank my own when I get home this evening.
Excellent.
I appreciate both of you being here today. Is there anything that we didn't touch on that you would like to make sure we know about before we end up here today?
You know, I guess I would just say that we're letting the community know that if there's one thing we've learned from the coronavirus, we always need to be prepared. And I think upgrading our facility for in the event that there were to be a Cascadia earthquake of some sort, that our campus ideally will still be standing as a building, and Pat's making sure all the infrastructure is tied down. So we'll have, lights and power, and our chillers will be working, and all those things will be available for our community and will be a resource for them when they need us.
Well, it's good to know that, we have the foresight to do that, and we've got a great hospital here, and you guys are very instrumental in making sure that happens along with our caregivers. So we sure do appreciate all that is being done there. Thank you so much.
Thanks, George.
Thank you.
And that wraps up another edition of Doc Talk here on Coast Radio KCST.
You have been listening to Doc Talk, presented by Peace Health Peace Harbor Medical Center. For more information on the program and services provided, visit peacehealth.org.